Radio.
This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Cat lovers and feline friends, it's time for Adele Park's Quirky Catnips.
Today on Quirky Catnips, we're airing a chapter of Quirky Cat Goes Splat by Adele Park. This frightfully funny tale is narrated by the ever-so-snarky Skitters the Cat. Find out what happens when Skitters goes cattywampus for a kitten named Harriet. Tune in each week to hear a new chapter of Quirky Cat Goes Splat, only on Pet Life Radio. Meow, kitties!
Audio Recording St. George presents Quirky Cat Goes Splat. Written, produced, and edited by Adele Park. Narrated by a full cast.
Splat!
Meow, bitches.
Twisted Tales by Skitters the Cat. Part 10.
I'm secure in my cathood, an attribute which enables me to remain in good humor when it comes to my twin handlers. As one would expect, they have fallen hopelessly in love with my stylish stripes and Halloween grin. Though it's hard to top this masterpiece, these little darlings try nonetheless. The twins are fond of hosting formal afternoon tea parties with me as their most honored guest. They stuff me into baby doll outfits and transport me to the festivities in an old-fashioned pram. I feel no shame in being displayed in a stunning ensemble from time to time. I just don't like that green checkered dress with the lace collar. It clashes with my stripes and looks so yesterday. To ensure I wouldn't suffer the humiliation of being seen in that dress again, I chewed the collar off and peed on it. Harriet has never had the joy of a fancy afternoon tea with her human. She hasn't so much as received a ribbon to wear, let alone play with. Despite this, Harriet is inexplicably bound to Evangeline. I've told her she should look into trading up, but Harriet just gives me one of those superior sniffs to remind me that she thinks I'm an imbecile. Maybe so, my sweet, but I'm your imbecile. Underneath Harriet's coat of snarky put-downs lies a scared and lonely soul. Normally, I don't like to hear other kitties' sob stories. Nancy Neptune siphoned off two of my lives, so if you can't top that, please close your smiler. Harriet's story is different. Her mother died pulling her and her sister out of Juniper Hollow when it was set on fire. Harriet's sister wisely split that ugly scene, but Harriet remained waiting for Evangeline. Most people think Nephi Stratton, the prophet of Zion Flats, torched the place to cover up a crime. It certainly wouldn't be the first time Nephi resorted to violence. Isla Ray Stratton, a runaway daughter of Nephi's, knew all about what this polygamist homeboy was capable of. I met her on the night she finally left that hellhole. Isla Ray had come to the apartment where I was recovering from having my rear paw pounded into mincemeat. Selecting Nancy Neptune as the person to rescue her from the clutches of moral corruption was an interesting choice.
Chapter 10. Isla Ray Stratton.
What's the point of breaking up with a guy if you have to talk to him on the phone practically every day? Okay, I'm not an expert on relationships. I've only had one boyfriend in my whole life. But still, where I come from, the divorce rate is 0%. No wonder I don't have the skills to run away from this situation. Most of Brandon's calls have been about Juniper Hollow. He's been snooping around, which is a very bad idea. I know that area well. Juniper Hollow is only a few miles from Zion Flats. It was a great place to hide when I had the nerve. Seeking refuge in the spot where dozens of people have been murdered is a brazen thing to do. Juniper Hollow is breathtakingly beautiful. In addition to juniper, it's got lots of big willow and oak trees, watered by a spring that feeds a small lake. On the north side of the lake is Granite Ridge. Water from the lake carved out a maze of catacombs underneath it. When Juniper Hollow was owned by the Fletcher family, one of them pounded iron pegs into a cave near the back of the catacombs, making a ladder that goes all the way to the top of Granite Ridge. This was how the Fletchers kept ahead of the law when they were distilling hooch. It's a dangerous climb, both ways. I haven't told Brandon about the ladder. Maybe he already knows. Hopefully, he won't be able to actually find it. Granite Ridge is shaped like a giant C, overlooking Juniper Hollow. You can't reach the catacombs without crossing the lake or else going in from the top. The cavern with the iron pegs isn't easy to get to. You either have to trespass on Boyd Fletcher's property and climb down, or swim across the lake and wind through a maze of catacombs. The passage to the ladder from the ground is partially blocked by a pile of rock debris left from when one of the caves collapsed. If I wasn't worried about what Brandon would do with the information, I'd tell him this was how Evangeline escaped the night her mother died. Then he'd want to know how she got to that side of the lake. Evangeline was only 4 at the time. Unless she had secretly been training for the toddler Olympics in either rowing or swimming, there is no way Evangeline could have gotten there on her own. I would die of thirst before I would ever drink the water in the lake at Juniper Hollow, let alone swim in it. I've been told Taj has already taken a dip. Brandon says Taj swam through some nasty sludge in India, so the lake at Juniper Hollow doesn't faze him a bit. There is only one road into Juniper Hollow, but the catacombs aren't the only escape route. Besides the tricky climb to the top of Granite Ridge, there is a narrow passage to the property from the ground. It blends in with the southeast side of the ridge, halfway between the catacombs and where the house once stood. Folks from Zion Flats call it Fletcher's Sneak. Like the cave with the ladder, you have to know what you're looking for. I used the sneak a lot. It was a heck of a lot safer than climbing up the ridge. Evangeline either didn't know about the sneak or was taken to the catacombs on purpose. Although I never met Evangeline, I knew her mother, Rebecca Simmons, better than I cared to. Rebecca's family was originally from Vancouver, Canada. Authorities had raided their community, jailing some of the men for bigotry, including Rebecca's father. The rest of them fled, joining up with our group in Zion Flats. Rebecca's mother was assigned to marry my father, Nephi, who is the prophet of Zion Flats. Since her first marriage was never legal, this wasn't much of a problem. Father holds all the cards when it comes to who marries who. Brides are offered as rewards to the most faithful members of the order. With certain brides, however, they're assigned as a test. I'm guessing this was the case with Rebecca. Rebecca was 5 years older than me. I was around 9 years old when she came to Zion Flats. Shortly after the Simmons moved into the house where I was living, Rebecca's little sister was killed in a freak accident. Looking back, I have to wonder if it wasn't on purpose. No one ever speaks the truth about what happens in Zion Flats, so I'll never know for sure. What is clear is that Rebecca resented having to care for her sister and was the only witness to the accident. Right after that happened, Rebecca was placed in marriage with Nicholas DeLuca. Everyone says Nicholas was obsessed with Rebecca. She was viciously beautiful, with long dark hair and silvery eyes. Despite this, Rebecca had a temper to be reckoned with. Even Nephi was confounded about how to deal with her. Rebecca seemed to share Nephi's taste for cruelty. I was already gone from Zion Flats on the night Rebecca died and Nicholas went missing. My aunt, Arinda, told the cops a lot of different stories about what happened. That's the polygamist way: confuse and baffle the authorities. Brandon was surprised when he found out Arinda is my aunt. I didn't know her very well. My father has nearly 24 sisters. Arinda was so ornery, I usually avoided her. Evidently, her temper hasn't gotten any better. Juniper Hollow had been abandoned for many years before Nicholas went there to hide, although his family must have kept up with the property taxes. Otherwise, I'm sure someone from the government would have tried to take over the place. A system had been rigged up to make it so Nicholas could tap into the power supply from Zion Flats. He bought a minivan, put it in Arinda's name, and had her get a driver's license. On the night Nicholas disappeared, some kind of violent fight happened in the house. The first thing Arinda did was cut the power supply. She was either afraid someone would find out about the illegal power line, or she just wanted to make the situation even more chaotic. The end result was that Evangeline wound up on Granite Ridge, Rebecca was dead on the ground at Juniper Hollow, and Nicholas hasn't been seen since. Here's the truly terrifying thing. Rebecca wasn't half as scary as her twin brother Willard. Things were never good in our house, but once Willard moved in, I started bolting like a jackrabbit. One of the dirtiest secrets about polygamy is the sickening amount of molestation that goes on in a lot of homes. Step-siblings from numerous mothers are all jammed together. Women are regarded as property in polygamy, so there's no boundaries, even with young boys. Willard started trapping my sister in the bathroom not long after my father married Rebecca's mother. I didn't fully understand what was happening. I just knew my sister seemed like she was losing touch with reality. She'd get this real absent look, like she wasn't even there. I tried to ask her if she was okay, but she'd just tell me to mind my own business. She was a year older than me, but I always felt like it was my fault for not stopping the horrible things happening in the bathroom. When Willard started coming after me, I ran fast.
Hang tight, kiddies. We'll be back in a scratch.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
What's more quirky than cannabis? A reality TV show where everyone is half-baked. Quirky Cannabis Country by Adele Park is a trip you'll never forget. Get Quirky Cannabis Country today on audible.com. Quirky Cannabis Country. Snag your copy before the whole place goes up in smoke. We now return to more of Quirky Cat Goes Splat by Adele Park on Pet Life Radio.
I had stopped believing in God even before Willard came to live with us. When I was 7, I awoke to a terrible screaming. Something unspeakable was happening to my mother. She was in the barn with Father. We could hear her wails from inside our house, even though all the doors and windows were shut. Micah, my 12-year-old brother, ran to the barn to try and help. The next day, he was gone. No one ever mentioned him again. Not even Mother. Later, I found out Father drove Micah halfway to Salt Lake City and abandoned him on the side of the interstate. If God were almighty like they say, there's no way he would let this kind of thing happen to a little kid. My mother was always powerless to do anything about the crimes committed against her children. Her life was a never-ending cycle of having babies, cooking, cleaning, and trying to make ends meet in a house where there was never enough of anything. Father was moody and oftentimes violent. As prophet of Zion Flats, it was Father's duty to do whatever it took to place us on the path to righteousness. No one dared to speak out or try to defend one another. We all kept our mouths shut about Willard. Every time Willard made a move towards me, I would run farther and farther. I'd come home late and get beaten by my father on the nights he was staying in my mother's house. Father decided the best way to break my spirit was to place me in marriage. I was 14. The man I was to spend all of time and eternity with was 53. He was my uncle. When I tried to escape, Father invited my soon-to-be husband to bear witness to my punishment. I was made to strip from the waist up so as not to soil my sacred garments or ruin my dress. I burned with shame as I stood naked in front of these men. They seemed to enjoy my degradation. That frightened me more than anything. The pain was excruciating. I may have blacked out during parts of it. Judging by the welts on my back, I was whipped at least a dozen times. Later, as I lay whimpering in agony and humiliation, I gave God one final chance. I prayed that He would end my suffering and let me die. Secretly, I was hoping to enjoy some time in the celestial kingdom before I was joined for all of eternity by the men who did this to me. God decided not to take my call. Instead, Mother awoke me at the usual time and sent me off to work at Good Karma. Moon McKenna gives off the impression that she is all business, harsh even. In reality, Moon is one of the most compassionate people I've met. Although I had tied some rags to my back to soak up the blood from the oozing gashes, I was bleeding through my dress. Moon excused me from work, taking me to a private part of the compound at Gecko's Gulch. She used a strange-smelling ointment on my back. It burned at first, then left me feeling mercifully numb. I could tell Moon was crying while she worked on me. Her tears stung my open lacerations. Somehow, dripping salt into my wounds felt like a curious form of medicine. Over the next few days, whenever Moon could get me alone, she talked about Nancy Neptune, a radio disc jockey who helped free Laryl Stratton, a cousin of mine. Moon hinted that Nancy might be able to help me, too. The night before Moon was leaving to work a convention in Las Vegas, I hid in her van. Moon must have been expecting this because she left a pile of cash along with a business card for Nancy Neptune in the cubbyhole where I stowed away. Like most polygamist girls, I was taught from the moment I could understand words that everyone in the outside world was against us. They wanted to put an end to our righteous ways of living. I didn't put Moon McKenna in this category, but it was hard to place my faith in Nancy Neptune. She was a truly unnerving woman, covered in tattoos. I couldn't believe this was the person who was supposed to help me. The most shocking things came out of her mouth. Don't get me wrong, I wouldn't be free today if it wasn't for her. It just took some getting used to. Although I no longer believed in God, I didn't give up on my religion until I met Nancy Neptune. I've been told she has this kind of effect on people. Unlike Brandon, who just spouts off about the ugly polygamist dresses and hideous hairdos, Nancy Neptune has actually read the Book of Mormon. The first thing she did was set me straight on the Word of Wisdom, pointing out that if alcohol was so bad, why was Jesus drinking it the night before he died? Then she ripped Joseph Smith, the founder of the Mormon faith, comparing his story about the golden plates to the nursery rhyme, Heaper Peeper. Growing up, I was taught the angel Moroni visited Joseph Smith, revealing to him the place to find the golden plates, which tell the story of our ancestors. The text was written in an ancient Egyptian language that could only be deciphered through magical seer stones called the Urim and Thummim. Nancy referred to those sacred eyeglasses as Blurim and Dummim. Nancy also scoffed at the idea that the Garden of Eden was in Missouri when Adam and Eve were kicked out by God, showing me pictures from that state on the internet. I had to agree. Missouri looks about as far from paradise as you can get. The list went on and on. Even our consecrated garments were a source of scorn. Nancy referred to them as underwear for unfuckable hags. It took less than 24 hours with Nancy Neptune to undo 14 years of religious doctrine that had been beaten into me since birth. The first thing I did was lose the unfuckable underwear. I'm not ready to give up my chastity just yet, but I don't want to be caught in those dreadful drawers when I do. If I had ever used a word like unfuckable in Zion Flats, my face would have been pulverized to the point where my looks matched my words. The woman I live with now is named Meredith Andrews. She is the niece of Laryl Stratton and the one who wrote Nephi a large check for his freedom. Then she let Nancy Neptune host a radio contest called Seven Brides for One Brother. Laryl was married off polygamous style, although his wives were all women from Naval. Later, at Moon's request, Meredith tried to buy my freedom. Not surprisingly, Nephi got greedy and asked for way more than she could pay. Eventually, Nephi got what he wanted, but only after Nancy Neptune went on the radio and rounded up donations. Meredith had been adopted by the family who owns the Diamonds in the Desert Casino. After Nephi got his grubbers on the money raised by Nancy Neptune, he signed papers naming Meredith as my official guardian. I was moved into a ritzy suite on the property and have been there ever since. I used to feel guilty about living in such opulence. Not that I'd ever complain out loud about having all the food I want. Owning a cell phone and computer isn't too shabby either. Meredith works as a wedding planner and events coordinator for her family's casino. She put together the engagement party for Brandon's dad, an event I also helped with. As a way to earn my keep, I set up chairs and tables whenever Meredith has something going on at Diamonds in the Desert. She was asked to plan the wedding at Gecko's Gulch, but Meredith didn't want to show her face there for the same reasons as me. It's not a good idea to remind Nephi that either one of us even exists. I am no longer afraid of being forced to go back to Zion Flats. Nephi's got his money and doesn't want any more trouble from a brawling DJ like Nancy Neptune. What I'm focused on now is helping Meredith rescue others from the oppression of polygamy. If either one of us appeared at Gecko's Gulch, it would be like pulling a fire alarm. I can't explain all this to Brandon without jeopardizing the efforts that are already underway. Moon is involved too. She's in a tight spot, though, because she still has to deal with Nephi. Not everyone who lives in a polygamous community is trying to escape. Eternal salvation is the name of the game, especially in Zion Flats. Many of these people willingly forfeit the lives they are living, literally dumping the baby out with the bathwater for the promise of the celestial kingdom. They participate in the most disgraceful forms of abuse and neglect just to save their own souls. There are a few, however, who would rather die as an apostate than live in heaven with those who harmed them. These are the people Meredith and I are trying to reach. Having Brandon act out against the entire community of Zion Flats isn't helpful at all. I knew what Brandon was up to long before he spelled it all out. After I ran away, Moon had a phone installed in the locker room at Good Karma. Workers are allowed to use it without any monitoring or questions. Some of the people who shunned me when I escaped are now interested in figuring out how they can too. Hopefully, Brandon won't blow their chances.
Skitters the cat hates Blue McKenna more than digesting hairballs. That's why he's especially irked to find that even in death, Blue won't give him a break. Adding insult to injury, Skitters is the only one who can help Blue find her way out of a hellish nightmare involving the DMV. Skitters can't get in a decent nap until he helps Blue cross over. And that's the rub. Get all the scratchy details in Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted by Adele Park.
In case you haven't noticed, you've been ghosted.
Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted. Get ghosted today on Audible, Downpour, and Spotify. Meow, kitties.
Let's Talk Pets. Every week on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.